Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, wishing all of our listeners a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Today we open our show with several breaking national news stories of importance to all Americans, starting with the federal shutdown due to the budget impasse. Find out how the shutdown is affecting federal workers and could impact many more Americans. Speaking of shutdowns, President Donald Trump has been forced to shut down his family foundation after New York State sued, alleging massive fraud and other criminal activities which the prosecution says were directed by Donald Trump. We'll also have reactions from members of Congress and retired military leaders on Trump's surprise announcement to withdraw troops from Syria and Afghanistan against the advice of military experts. That decision led to the resignation of Defense Secretary Mattis, as well as serious questions over why the president made the decision and whether he may even be beholden to foreign powers who will benefit from having American troops withdrawn from Middle East hotspots. In local news, El Cajon's City Council made a key vote concerning a child migrant detention center within the city. The reopening of the East County Performing Arts Center has been delayed again. Find out why on today's show. Then on Green Scene, hear about a rat poison that's killing big cats across California. And learn about the latest developments in the Finito Ranch massive housing proposal in Santee. East County Chamber of Commerce CEO Eric Lund will be leaving soon and we'll have details. And those will be some big shoes to fill. If you're an El Cajon resident and would like to volunteer, the city has openings on several key boards and commissions. And on People Power, hear how some local school children helped make dreams come true for formerly homeless youngsters who now have a new playground at the East County Transitional Living Center. Here's some more good news. Borrego Springs residents have a brand new library, park, and sheriff station. On our health report, learn why the county is installing Stop the Bleeding kits in public buildings. Also hear why the county is asking holiday travelers to please don't pack a pest. And then on Destination East County, hear about some fun and festive happenings coming up, including New Year's Eve parties, hikes, classes, a circus, and more coming up in the new year. And finally, we'll have an excerpt from Vivaldi's Gloria, performed by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. The federal government shutdown that began just days before Christmas could continue until the new Congress convenes January 3rd or beyond. For over 700,000 federal workers affected, President Donald Trump may be viewed as the Grinch who stole Christmas. Trump refused to sign any spending bill unless it contained $5 billion for border wall funding. The House passed a spending bill with funding included, but the Senate did not muster the 60 votes needed for passage, and a CBS poll shows the majority of Americans oppose building a border wall, which is also opposed by the majority of Democrats. Trump first said he was proud to shut down the government over border wall funding, but later blamed Democrats, even though Republicans still have a majority in both houses of Congress, which is now adjourned for the holiday season. So what government services are affected by the shutdown? About 300,000 federal workers have been furloughed, meaning time off without pay. It will be up to Congress to pass legislation to provide pay retroactively for these workers, but there's no guarantee that Congress will do so or that the president would sign such legislation. So for workers living paycheck to paycheck, the shutdown brings a pall of uncertainty to the holiday season. During a prior shutdown, janitors, security guards, and cafeteria workers in federal buildings, for example, never got paid. The shutdown is also inconveniencing some travelers and tourists arriving to find national landmarks and some national parks shut down. Here in San Diego, Cabrillo National Monument is closed. If the shutdown is extended, the impacts could be far worse for poor families should benefits run out for federal programs such as SNAP, the food assistance program formerly known as food stamps. About 400,000 more federal workers in occupations deemed critical for national security will be working during the shutdown, although they won't get their paychecks until after the shutdown ends. So if you're traveling and those TSA workers and airport security checkpoints seem not so cheery, this may be why. Other critical employees who will be working without pay include Border Patrol officers, firefighters with the National Forest Service, FBI agents, prison guards, Custom and Border Patrol agents, and National Weather Service forecasters, to name a few. Who isn't affected by the current shutdown? Military personnel will still receive their paychecks due to a defense spending bill. Members of Congress and the President will also still be paid, despite imposing stress on hundreds of thousands of families this holiday season by failing to come to an agreement to assure that all federal workers will receive their paychecks, too.
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. President Donald Trump has agreed to close down his Donald J. Trump Foundation after New York Attorney General Barbara Underwood filed a lawsuit against the foundation over what she calls a shocking pattern of illegality involving the Trump Foundation, including unlawful coordination with the Trump presidential campaign, repeated and willful self-dealing, and much more. Her office's investigation into Trump and his three oldest children, all officers on the foundation, will continue despite the agreement to shut down the charitable organization. According to the New York Attorney General, none of the foundation's expenditures or activities were approved by its board of directors, which had not met since 1991. Underwood says, "Mr. Trump alone made all decisions related to the foundation." Trump has agreed to have the charity's remaining $1.75 million in assets dispersed under court supervision to legitimate charities. Underwood is also seeking the court to order Trump to pay over $2.8 million in restitution, and she wants the judge to ban the President of the United States and his three adult children, Ivanka, Eric, and Donald Jr., from serving on boards of any other charities in New York. Trump used his charity's money as his own piggy bank, the Washington Post reports, including illegal expenditures for his campaign, including giveaway items at his rallies during the presidential primaries. He also reportedly wrote foundation checks to buy portraits of himself to hang at his golf resorts, to purchase a fountain for Trump Tower, to take a trip to Paris, and numerous additional acts of self-dealing, which is also illegal. He failed to register the charity in New York for purposes of accepting outside donations, another violation. Some donations raise red flags with investigators because they appear to be efforts to buy influence illegally, including $25,000 paid by the foundation to Florida's attorney general while the official was reviewing fraud allegations against Trump University. Investigators are also probing whether the foundation took money that was given for illegal purposes. Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller is looking into a $150,000 donation made to the Trump Foundation in 2015 by Ukrainian billionaire Viktor Pinch. Trump's former attorney Michael Cohen said he solicited that donation in return for Trump's appearance at a video conference in Kiev after Trump began his presidential campaign. Federal election law prohibits foreigners from contributing to U.S. political campaigns. The New York State suit was filed following an investigation into the Trump charity by Washington Post reporter David Fahrenthold, who won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on Trump's so-called charity. The newspaper's investigation initially turned up evidence that the Trump Foundation raised large sums for veterans, but as of the Post's investigation months later, the foundation had not paid any money to veterans' charitable organizations. The newspaper's investigation subsequently unearthed many other dubious claims made by Trump, including finding that the foundation failed to honor a pledge of $10,000 to the Twin Towers Fund to help victims of the 9/11 terrorist attacks in New York. Trump Foundation also reportedly made illegal payments to settle legal disputes involving Trump's Mar-a-Lago Country Club and other Trump businesses. The foundation was originally formed in 1987 to disperse funds raised from sales of Trump's Art of the Deal book. But Trump stopped giving any of his own money to the foundation soon after, and in recent decades, it has dispersed only funds solicited from outside donors. Mark Owens, former head of the IRS Office of Exempt Organizations Division, told the Washington Post that the long list of troubles with the Trump Foundation is bizarre, adding, "It's the first time I've ever seen this. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, D.C. has filed a complaint with the IRS over apparent violations of tax laws governing charitable organizations. Trump and his family members could ultimately face criminal charges in New York for illicit foundation activities. State crimes, unlike federal offenses, cannot be eliminated by a presidential pardon."
Prominent congressional leaders in both parties and military experts have voiced alarm over President Donald Trump's announcement that he plans to immediately withdraw U.S. troops from Syria. The president has also ordered the Pentagon to withdraw half of America's forces from Afghanistan starting in January. While that may come as welcome news to families of long-deployed military members after years of war, the decision was made without consulting Congress, military leaders, or key cabinet officials. Many experts warn that this could plunge the region into chaos and allow ISIS terrorists to regain power, also benefiting Russian President Vladimir Putin, who has backed Syrian strongman Bashar Assad, as well as Iran, a Russian ally, and Turkey. The decision also resulted in resignation of Defense Secretary and retired General Jim Mattis, known as the Warrior Monk for his deliberative approach to fully studying military matters before making key decisions. Mattis announced he would step down February 28th to assure a smooth transition, but Trump later ordered Mattis to be gone by year's end. The president has named Patrick Shanahan, a former Boeing executive, as acting Secretary of Defense. Trump tweeted, "We have defeated ISIS in Syria, my only reason for being there." But national security experts in both parties make clear that there has not been a victory over ISIS, which remains a threat in the Mideast. Mattis resigned in protest over Trump's unilateral troop withdrawal decision and other recent actions that the defense secretary disagreed with, including weakening alliances with European allies, calling for an end to military exercises in North Korea, and ignoring Mattis' advice in choosing the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In his blistering resignation letter, Mattis criticized the president's alliances with dictators instead of leaders of democracies. Quote, "It is clear that China and Russia want to shape a world consistent with their authoritarian model, gaining veto authority over other nations' economic, diplomatic, and security decisions," Mattis wrote, "to promote their own interests at the expense of their neighbors, America and our allies. That is why we must use all the tools of American power to provide for the common defense." And Mattis added, "My views on treating allies with respect and also being clear-eyed about both malign actors and strategic competitors are strongly held and informed by over four decades of immersion in these issues." And he again emphasized the importance of strong alliances with allies who share America's values. California Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, who is expected to be the next Speaker of the House in January, called it premature for Trump to declare victory over ISIS, and she warned, "All Americans should be concerned that this hasty announcement was made on the day after sentencing and criminal proceedings began against the president's former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who admitted that he was a registered foreign agent for Turkey, a country with clear interests in the Syrian conflict." A judge last week admonished Flynn, stating, "Arguably, you sold out your country." Flynn's sentencing has been postponed until March. Flynn pled guilty to lying to the FBI after cooperating with Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's investigation into Trump campaign ties to Russia, which have now resulted in numerous indictments and guilty pleas by top Trump campaign officials, including his campaign manager, Paul Manafort, Trump's attorney Michael Cohen, and former National Security Advisor Flynn, as well as numerous Russian nationals and others. Some have suggested that Russia may have knowledge of illegal activities by Trump in his business dealings or Russian efforts to influence the U.S. election, and that Trump may be beholden to Russia, a nation long viewed by U.S. intelligence as a hostile foreign power. NBC News this week obtained a copy of a 50-plus page agreement signed by Donald Trump proposing a Trump Tower in Moscow during his campaign, even when he told the American people he had no business dealings with Russia. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, a member of the Armed Services Committee, called Trump's action ordering troops withdrawn chaos. Brett McGurk, the Trump administration's own special envoy to the anti-ISIS coalition, stated in mid-December that U.S. withdrawal from the region would be reckless. Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio says bluntly, "It's a terrible decision. I hope it can be entirely or at least partially reversed, or we're going to pay a big price for it in the years to come." Senator Bob Corker, Republican from Tennessee and chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, called Trump's decision in many ways even worse than Obama's withdrawal from Iraq that critics said helped lead to growth of ISIS. The pullouts put at risk the safety of Kurdish and Arab military groups that have fought ISIS with U.S. backing. Syrian residents and Christians in the Middle East all faced massacre and persecution at the hands of ISIS, and the Kurds could also face annihilation now by the Turks, who have long opposed any territory for the Kurds. In Afghanistan, U.S. withdrawal could lead to resurgence of the Taliban, or even Al-Qaeda. At least one senator has offered praise for Trump's decision. Republican Rand Paul of Kentucky wrote on Twitter, "I am happy to see a president who can declare victory and bring our troops out of a war. It's been a long time since that has happened." Senator Chris Murphy, a Connecticut Democrat, said he wants to see a long-term plan, which the president has not provided. "If we move the troops out, are we putting more State Department personnel in?" Murphy asked. "Are we putting more development dollars into the areas where you have some American interests at stake?" Perhaps the most scathing comments came from retired general and Supreme Allied Forces commander Wesley Clark in an interview on CNN. He openly questioned whether Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan may have blackmailed President Trump into ordering troops removed from Syria. General Clark said, "There doesn't seem to be any strategic rationale for the decision. And if there's no strategic rationale for the decision, then you have to ask, why was that decision made?" Adding, "People around the world are asking this, and some of our friends and our allies in the Middle East are asking, did Erdogan blackmail the president? Was there a payoff?" Clark asks, noting that all recommendations to President Trump have always advised against the troop pullout. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
El Cajon City Council has voted unanimously to send letters to the California Department of Social Services and to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services asking for a review of Southwest Key programs. The Texas-based company runs shelters for undocumented immigrant children, including the one in El Cajon. Children in the facility include both unaccompanied minors and children separated from parents by U.S. immigration officials. Council members Steve Goebel and Gary Kendrick co-sponsored the proposal, which stemmed from a San Diego Union-Tribune article which revealed that Southwest Key reported to the El Cajon police that 7 children ran away from the facility last year. But the company only reported 3 of those missing children to the California Department of Social Services. Councilman Goebel stated during a mid-December hearing, quote, "These are children, and this does have an impact on our community." He says he wants to get information and alert agencies with oversight of these inconsistencies. Councilman Kendrick made clear, quote, "The primary purpose of government is protection of the people, including those who are undocumented." The facility in El Cajon houses about 65 children, ages 6 through 17. Southwest Key operates 27 similar shelters across California, Arizona, and Texas. Anna Babudar, Southwest Key's assistant program director, told the city council that the company met with California Department of Social Services officials earlier this year. She said the organization had not been cited for any of its reporting problems. The company has been licensed by the federal government to run the El Cajon facility since February of 2016 and also operates 2 other child immigrant facilities in San Diego County. Southwest Key invited El Cajon council members to tour the facility in El Cajon, located at Broadway and Oro Street. East County Magazine asked to be included in the tour, but Babajord denied our request, stating, quote, that under no circumstances are journalists allowed inside the facility. A regional director for Southwest Key, Sebi Sebastian, said that Southwest's policy is to report when children run away from the facility, but disturbingly, the company does not follow up to learn where these children end up. The Union Tribune in October reported that the California Department of Social Services investigated Southwest Key in July when they failed to provide children adequate food options. The state ordered the company to correct the deficiency or face civil penalties. Because the children's facility is run under the jurisdiction of the federal government, the city of El Cajon has no regulatory authority, except for zoning and land use issues. Democratic activist Bonnie Price, during public testimony, said that she is concerned about detained children on a national scale, noting that Homeland Security has recently dropped vetting requirements to screen out workers with a history of abuse. She concluded, quote, "It's very important that there be inspections constantly to assure that people are not being harmed." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
This is John Fisteer with an Arts and Music Report. The much-anticipated reopening of the East County Performing Arts Center has been postponed yet again. The community theater has been closed for over a decade, fallen into disrepair following years of mismanagement. Now under the management of Live Nation, reportedly the world's largest concert promoter, the theater was scheduled to open in the near future. But now reservations aren't expected to be completed until May, with booking of major headline acts being postponed until fall of next year. The delay is due to a need to replace the heating and air conditioning system, as well as more problems with the aging roof. El Cajon's City Council approved an additional $1.85 million to fix these problems, raising the city's total cost to upgrade the facility to $8.2 million. So far, most of that money has come from the sale of the former police station building to a hotel developer. The council vote was 4-0, with Councilman Colasso abstaining.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Brianna Gomez with the Green Scene Report. A new state analysis has documented highly toxic rat poisons in over 85% of mountain lions, bobcats, and protected Pacific fishers tested, prompting state regulators to open a new evaluation on whether to further restrict or ban the powerful toxins. The California Department of Pesticide Regulations analysis of 11 different wildlife studies found that poisons meant for rats and other rodents continue to poison many other animals in large numbers, despite state restrictions on sale and use of the deadliest rodenticides since 2014. The non-targeted animals often die from eating poisoned rodents. Jonathan Evans, legal director of the Center for Biological Diversity's Environmental Health Program, says, quote, "This alarming new evidence should spur the state to ban these dangerous poisons." He adds, "There are safer, cheaper alternatives that greatly reduce risks to wildlife, pets, and children. Pesticide regulators have no excuse for continuing to allow California's wildlife to die slow, excruciating deaths." 4 years ago, the state limited the sale and use of so-called supertoxic rat poisons, or second-generation anticoagulant rodenticides, only to licensed applicators. But they are still allowed statewide for agricultural users and licensed pest control operators. The ongoing wildlife poisonings and legal pressure from wildlife advocates prompted the Department of Pesticide Regulation to open a reevaluation, and as part of that assessment, the public can submit comments through January 16th. The new state analysis documented supertoxic rat poisons in more than 90% of tested mountain lions, 88% of bobcats, and 85% of protected Pacific fishers. In addition, the potent rat toxins were also found in 70% of endangered north spotted owls and 40% of barred owls tested. In addition, the analysis suggests that anticoagulant rodenticides are associated with an often deadly form of mange, which can kill animals such as bobcats. More than 70% of wildlife tested in California in recent years has been exposed to dangerous rodenticides. Officials have found poisonings in over 25 different species of animals, including endangered wildlife such as the San Joaquin kit fox. The poisons are killing more than wildlife. Over 4,400 children under age 6 were also poisoned with long-acting anticoagulant rodenticides in the United States in 2016 alone, according to the American Association of Poison Control Centers. The Environmental Protection Agency has found that children in low-income families are disproportionately exposed to the poisons. Thousands of incidents of pets being poisoned by rodenticides have also been reported, many resulting in serious injury or death. Effective and affordable alternatives to rat poison are available. These include rodent-proofing of homes and farms by sealing cracks and eliminating food sources, providing owl boxes in rural areas to encourage natural predation, and using traps that don't involve toxic chemicals, such as old-fashioned snap traps or new-tech electronic rat traps that only kill rodents, not other animals, pets, or children. For more information on non-toxic rodent control methods, you can visit saferodentcontrol.org.
The battle over the Finita Ranch urban development proposal in Santee entered a new phase once the city of Santee scheduled a scoping meeting at the end of November to gather public input on a revamped proposal. The land occupies a quarter of the city on the northwest side, close to the Mission Trails Regional Park and the military base at Miramar. Developers, local politicians, environmental activists, and residents have fought for the past 36 years over whether to have the area approved for housing or restore it as a nature preserve. The city of Santee approved the proposal for urban development in 2007, but lost in court when challenged over failure to address water supply and fire safety issues. The land went into foreclosure a few years later. HomeFed acquired the property for $11 million and sought approval for its project, which included 1,380 housing units, a big step down from the original controversial plan for 14,000 homes. In 2017, a politically charged year before the midterm elections, HomeFed came up with a new plan to build 2,949 homes on the 2,650 acres, allowing 1,600 acres of open space, 75% of the site, to be preserved for public trails. But this change in the project for higher density would require a change in the general plan. Local residents objected to the city council voting on such projects without public input, so the people of Santee gathered enough signatures to put an initiative on the ballot in 2018 that would require a public vote on any project that exceeds the scope of Santee's general plan. But the initiative was blocked by the city council, which voted to delay putting the measure on the ballot until 2020 and instead approved a $40,000 feasibility study. The Finita Ranch project was a hot topic at candidate forums, but ultimately, all of the challengers who openly opposed Finita Ranch or supported the People's Initiative lost their elections, which were won by incumbents Ron Hall and Rob McNellis, as well as Laura Koval, who will replace Brian Jones after his election to the state Senate. Incumbent Councilman Stephen Houlihan teamed up with Van Collingsworth of Preserve Wild Santee, a local nonprofit group, in a post to the group's website which claimed, quote, a flood of developer dollars are backing incumbent / status quo candidates in this city council election. The dark money backing for these candidates show that this election is about resident versus developer control of the city and the ability to approve the massive Finita Ranch project, unquote. Despite the opposition, HomeFed managed to move ahead with the project. During the scoping meeting organized by the City of Santee on November 29th, Director of Operations Jeff O'Connor promised to solve two major issues facing Santee at this time, the budget deficit and the traffic issues, mainly on Highway 52 and Mast Boulevard. O'Connor promised residents that HomeFed will tackle traffic head-on by building a new lane in each direction on State Route 52, adding, if we don't get traffic improved, we won't get the project done. HomeFed is planning to build a 35-acre park along with 15 smaller parks for residents of the low and middle density housing units. A privately owned farm will provide fresh produce to the Finita Ranch inhabitants. A K-8 school will be built next to an active adults community designed to offer homes for senior citizens. O'Connor says the Finita Ranch community would be self-sustaining, with solar on all homes supplemented by a solar farm. He adds that new trails would be open to the public. Fire safety is a key concern. O'Connor promised an extensive fire plan to make Finita Ranch one of the safest communities in San Diego, including homes built with fire-resistant materials. He insisted that concerns over only one lane of traffic in and out of the project at Cuyamaca and Finita Parkway could be addressed by having both lanes open in the same direction if an evacuation is needed. But Van Collingsworth with Preserve Wild Santee, which sued and won in the past to block this project, isn't satisfied with those answers. His main objections are traffic, environmental impacts, fire safety, and water use. "We just saw a community being wiped off the map," Collingsworth said of the recent fire that destroyed the town of Paradise, California. He warned, "That should be a message. We need to do better in terms of land use, and we certainly need to do a lot better in terms of greenhouse gas. The better way to do this is what I've been saying for 25 years. Let's preserve this land." Santee resident Justin Schlafly is also concerned about the traffic, but likes the overall plan. He said it has a lot of cool features and sounds like an exciting place to live. Schlafly listed the village center and the agriculture, some exciting restaurants and places to go, among his favorite items on the map, and said he would welcome HomeFed to Santee. John O'Donnell, principal planner with Santee's Development Services Department, said the scoping meeting is the initial step in an environmental impact report on the project, which he expects will be completed by the end of 2019. Collingsworth fears that Santee's City Council majority may vote on final approval of the Finita Ranch project, along with modification of the general plan, before citizens can have a chance to weigh in at the ballot box in 2020. But during the campaign, Vice Mayor McNellis said in an interview on KNSJ, "I absolutely am in favor of the citizens of Santee having their own vote on this." Koval, too, assured in her pre-election interview, "I want the voters to have a voice on Finita Ranch. Let the voters decide in 2020. Collingsworth says that if council members break their campaign pledges and approve Finita Ranch before the people of Santee can vote on the ballot initiative, his organization is prepared to take legal action. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce is seeking a new chief executive officer following the resignation of CEO Eric Lund. Lund, who has worked for the chamber for 5 years, has accepted a new position with another organization and will leave on January 11th. Board Chair Stacy Mackey says Lund will be missed, yet through his leadership he is leaving the organization in a very strong position. Lund started or oversaw several successful programs that will remain as his legacy locally. Some of the business programs started or supported by Lund during his tenure include the East County Homeless Task Force, Refer East County, Shop East County, East County Leadership, and San Diego County Tourism Marketing. Mackey credits Lund for playing a key role in providing leadership to improve business competitiveness, as well as leading the chamber out of financially turbulent times. "When he took the helm, we had gone through a very difficult recession and have since emerged with more members and a stable financial footing, as well as overcome challenges to rebuild the organization into a premier operation that benefits the members and community," Mackey says, adding, "Eric has also established a high level of integrity, ethics, and transparency, and has helped to regain the confidence of the business community. The Chamber Board has established a search committee to identify the next CEO. During the search for a new CEO, Office and Membership Development Manager John DeChevec will oversee programs and staff to help provide a smooth transition." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
The City of El Cajon City Council is accepting applications for several commissions and committees. These include the Gillespie Field Development Council, the City's Personnel Commission, the Planning Commission, the Public Safety Facility Financing Oversight Committee, and the Veterans Commission. The filing period is open now through January 14th. Applications are available in the City Clerk's office and on the City's website, where you can also get information about qualifications for these positions. In addition, you can call the City Clerk's office at 619-441-1763 for details. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is John Fisteer with East County Magazine's People Power Report. Fourth grade students at Meridian Elementary School in El Cajon were asked how they would like to improve their community. The children dreamed up the idea of a playground for families at the East County Transitional Living Center in El Cajon, which helps homeless people transition off the streets. The students also created a design for an ideal playground, but they had no idea that Allstate Insurance had provided funding through its Good Starts Young program to make the playground concept become a reality. On December 4th, the Meridian Elementary School children were brought by bus to the East County Transitional Living Center, where they were surprised and delighted to see a fully constructed playground that their visions had inspired, now bringing smiles to formerly homeless children. According to a statement issued by Allstate, the community project with Meridian Elementary represents Allstate's mission to empower young people to become the next generation of leaders and change makers, inspiring us all to be better citizens in our communities.
It's official. The new county library, park, and sheriff's office are open for business in Borrego Springs. A formal ribbon-cutting ceremony kicked off a community celebration with music, artists, animals, and tours of the new library and sheriff's office. The two buildings and park all share a 19-acre property. The library branch is the larger of the two buildings and sits on over 2.5 acres. The facility measures 3 times the size of the previous one and includes a community meeting space, a conference room, separate areas for children and teens, a technology center with a 3D printer, plus a Friends of the Library book nook and conversation cafe. The community park is next to the library and features shaded playgrounds, trails, picnic areas, basketball, volleyball, and tennis courts, outdoor fitness stations, 100-seat amphitheater, and an off-leash dog park. The new sheriff's office replaces an old facility across the street that used to be a bank. According to the sheriff's department, the space is more functional and will help sheriff's deputies and the sheriff's senior volunteer patrol better serve the communities of Borrego Springs and Ocotillo Wells. Construction on the $13.9 million projects started in October 2017 and was completed December 5th. Reporting for East County Magazine in Borrego Springs, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is John Fisteer with a health report. At the urging of emergency room doctors and first responders, the County of San Diego has begun installing bleeding control kits at its facilities. Supervisor Diane Jacob announced on Facebook, "Medical experts say the kits are critical in boosting survival rates after a traumatic event." According to a UCSD San Diego School of Medicine website article titled, "Stop the Bleed, Stop the Need," recent mass shooting events in Thousand Oaks and Pittsburgh showed the need for a public health approach to firearms injury. At both of those events, bystanders and first responders were able to help stop some of the victims from bleeding out by using Stop the Bleed training. Started in 2016 at UC San Diego, the Stop the Bleed campaign has resulted in over 2,000 UC San Diego health employees and members of the public receiving training in how to recognize and stop life-threatening bleeding with direct pressure, tourniquets, and wound packing. Recently, public accessible Stop the Bleed kits have been installed at San Diego International Lindbergh Airport, the San Diego Convention Center, and the lobbies at UC San Diego Health. Now, UCSD's experts are helping train County of San Diego personnel, and with supervisors' support, aim to place Stop the Bleeding public access kits at all county public buildings, such as libraries and recreation centers, as well as government offices. The effort is part of a national campaign brought about by surgeons, including gun owners, to provide a public health approach to reduce deaths from gun violence. UCSD School of Medicine website states, "We hope all surgeons and their allies can work together to stop the bleeding and stop the need." Ultimately, the American College of Surgeons and the organization's Committee on Trauma aspires to train every American in basic bleeding control techniques and to work towards placing bleeding control kits in every public venue, including schools, community centers, places of worship, and stadiums.
The holiday season is a time for traveling, sending, and exchanging gifts. But if you're not careful, you could accidentally pack a hitchhiking invasive pest into your luggage or in a homemade gift. This holiday season, the county is asking travelers to please don't pack a pest. That could be mealybugs in a homemade fruit basket, gypsy moth eggs hidden in a wreath you got from Grandma's house, white flies in those hand-picked poinsettias, or a dangerous plant virus in citrus picked from your own backyard. Nobody wants to give or get a gift with creepy crawlies, which can also be devastating to San Diego's nearly $2 billion agricultural industry. San Diego County's Department of Agriculture Weights and Measures works every year to keep out invasive pests like the gold-spotted oak borer, light brown apple moth, Asian citrus psyllid, and South American palm weevil to stop them from harming local growers and our environment. This year, through November 30th, county inspectors intercepted 170 agriculturally dangerous pests, plus dog teams have sniffed out and intercepted 52 pests hitchhiking in on shipments through the Postal Service. So during your holiday travel this gift-giving season, here are some handy guidelines to follow. If you're traveling, whether it's out of state or out of the country, leave whatever you find on your trip right where you found it. Don't bring home a keepsake clipping from Aunt Penny's holiday wreath or those bulbs you found in Florida, or any citrus branches, leaves, or stems from anywhere, or avocado leaves from Mexico. Don't transport any fresh, raw, uncooked foods, seeds, beans, nuts, rice, dried fruit, decorative greenery, untreated wood items, or animal products. Also avoid transporting soil from any foreign country. Now, if you're traveling and think you may have accidentally packed some plant or animal item, declare those products when you're asked by an agricultural inspector if you have anything in your luggage. And remember, don't pack a pest. For more information about dangerous insects and plant diseases, you can visit the County of San Diego's Agriculture Weights and Measures website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes New Year's Eve celebrations in Alpine, Lakeside, and Jamul, plus events coming up in January, including a circus in Otay Ranch, classes at the Water Conservation Garden, live music and open mic nights at Winola Pizza, ice skating at Viejas, desert hikes, and a Paleolithic conference in Borrego Springs, a star party at Mission Trails, and the musical Songs for a New World at the Encore Theater in Spring Valley.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Viejas is hosting two New Year's Eve celebrations. A bash at the park at Viejas will feature live music from Rising Star, options to buy food and drinks, and watching a glittering ball drop at midnight, followed by a dazzling fireworks display. Or opt for an upscale New Year's Eve gala in the Oak Ballroom, complete with dinner, open bar, and dancing the night away. For tickets and details, you can visit viejas.com and click the Entertainment tab.
Verona will also be celebrating the new year with a party starting at 4 p.m. that includes games, live music, food mobs, and a midnight toast. You can visit Verona.com for details.
The Hamul Casino will be ringing in the new year with a New Year's Eve party December 31st that starts at noon and continues until 2019 arrives. Options include a New York-style dinner at the Prime Cut Steakhouse or a lobster and prime rib buffet at the Tony Gwynn Sports Bar, plus DJs and live entertainment until 1:30 a.m. at Tony Gwynn's, the Jive Lounge, and the Loft 94 Beer Garden. For full details, you can visit HamulCasinoSD.com.
American Crown Circus is bringing its Circo Osorio to the Otay Ranch Town Center January 10th through the 14th. A family tradition for over 90 years, this show includes aerial acrobats, trapeze flyers, illusions, a wheel of death, daredevils, creative costumes, and theatrical showmanship. The Las Vegas-based show promises spellbinding performances as aerial artists swing, acrobats tumble, and artists defy the laws of gravity just inches from the audience. For tickets and details, visit AmericanCrownCircusTickets.com.
Winter is the season to explore our desert region. The Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association will host several hikes in January in California's largest state park, including outings to places such as Palm Canyon and Hornblende Canyon. There's a moonlight walk, as well as bicycling and birdwatching events. For a full schedule of these and more activities, visit the Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association at abdnha.org.
The Water Conservation Garden has some fascinating classes coming up in January, including the lore of the Kumeyaay, garden yoga, and an all-about worms composting class. You can also enjoy docent-led tours of the garden. For more information, you can visit thegarden.org.
Winola Wood-Fired Pizza and Bistro in Winola, on Highway 78, just outside of Julian, offers live entertainment every Friday and Saturday night from 6 to 9 p.m., plus open mic nights each Thursday starting at 6 p.m. You're invited to come show your talent or enjoy listening to others. For more information, you can visit WinolaPizza.com.
The largest outdoor ice skating rink in Southern California is open now through January 6th at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. Rental skates are available. In addition to ice skating, visitors can enjoy holiday entertainment and a seasonal water show. For details, visit viejas.com.
The New Discoveries in the American Paleolithic Conference will be held in Borrego Springs, January 10th through 12th. This conference will present evidence from throughout the Americas that demonstrate the presence of a widespread human occupation much earlier than was previously recognized. How early? 16,000 years ago. To register, you can visit the Anza Borrego Foundation website at theabf.org/calendar/new-discoveries.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to a star party on January 12th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Amateur astronomer George Varga and his telescope will be at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground Day Use Lot, where you can view the Seven Sisters constellation, the Andromeda Galaxy, and more celestial sites. For more information, visit Mission Trails Regional Park at mtrp.org and click on their calendar.
Young Actors Theater will present Songs for a New World January 24th through 27th at the Encore Theater in Spring Valley. Songs for a New World was the first musical from Tony Award winner Jason Robert Brown. The show is a collection of powerful songs that examine life, love, and the choices that we make. The show transports the audience from the deck of a 1492 Spanish sailing ship to a ledge 57 stories above Fifth Avenue in New York. The audience will meet an array of characters, ranging from a young man who has determined that basketball is his ticket out of the ghetto, to a woman whose dream of marrying rich nabs her the man of her dreams, and a soulless marriage. For tickets, visit yatsandiego.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, You can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all across East County, not a creature was stirring from Julian to El Monte. The stockings were hung by the chimneys with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
From Barona to Ramona, Hakumba to Hamul, East County residents will soon celebrate the Yule. From smartphones and iPads amid holiday dishes, our readers have sent Santa their holiday wishes.
Out in Borrego, where the waters run low, the town wants a deluge of rainfall to flow. In gridlocked Santee, residents ask Santa to please bring some new lanes for State Route 52.
Lemon Grove City Council is asking Kris Kringle to bring in new businesses and make cash registers jingle. Over in El Cajon, loyal arts fans are hoping the Performing Arts Center soon will reopen.
Meanwhile, in Lakeside, residents ask help divine to stop El Monte Valley from becoming a sand mine. In La Mesa's downtown, where a farmer's market's begun, merchants want more shoppers and diners to come.
Alpine fire survivors need to rebuild from ash, so they're asking for stockings to be filled with some cash. Rural ratepayers want utility bills please to go down. Descanso just wants power to stay on in their town.
Out at Cottonwood Golf Course on the 18th hole, neighbors ask Santa to leave a lump of coal for the course's new owner who wants to mine sand, harming wildlife in a preserve on neighboring land.
Out in the vineyards, from valleys to mountaintops, winery owners ask Santa for bountiful crops. On Mount Helix, a parole office is proposed near a school. Neighbors want the project stopped for their Yule.
At East County's Native American reservations, tribes seek good fortune for all sovereign nations. As Sequan's new hotel opening date draws near, the tribe hopes the new year brings plenty of cheer.
With political changes now sweeping the nation, local officials want bipartisan cooperation. Congressman Hunter, snuggled in his bed, has visions of acquittal dancing in his head.
Like Bethlehem immigrants from far away, migrants at our border have no place to stay. They hope for asylum to start a new life in the United States, free from fear and from strife.
Local migrants from Mexico and the Mideast want Santa to please bring our planet world peace. East County's homeless want a safe place to sleep. Desert Park Rangers seek more bighorn sheep.
Julian's farmers want more apples to grow, so all the town's pie makers will be rolling in dough. Julian residents ask in their letter to Santa, please save our fire department before the next Santa Ana.
Cal Fire crews have sent this refrain, can Santa please give us lots of rain? Atop Mount Laguna, lodge guests in nightcaps had just settled down for long winter's nap.
When out o'er the lodge there arose such a clatter, they sprang from their beds to see what was the matter. Away to the windows they flew like a flash, jumped on e-scooters, and out they did dash.
The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to their wondering eyes should appear but a magical sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer.
With a little old driver so lively and quick, they knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. Beside golden eagles his reindeer they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the mountain, then the new border wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all.
As dry leaves that before Santa Ana winds fly, when they meet with a wind turbine mount to the sky, so up to Mount Laguna the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too.
And then in a twinkling guests heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As they texted the good news and were turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound.
He was dressed in faux fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with wildfire soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a backpacker opening his pack.
His eyes how they twinkled, his dimples how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow.
A hemp pipe, now legal, he held tight in his teeth, and its smoke encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like Julian apple jelly.
He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elfie, so guests laughed when they saw him, and some took a selfie. A wink of his eye and a red cowboy hat on his head soon gave all to know they had nothing to dread.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a twerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose.
He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like a swift SpaceX missile. But all heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, Merry Christmas, East County,
and to all a good night.
Ho, ho, ho!
And finally today, we're going to end our holiday week show with an excerpt of Vivaldi's Gloria performed by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to KNSJ 89.1 FM broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.